Wanna go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 125 of the Big Show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another Wednesday, wacky Wednesday. Got a really special guest for you guys today. It's actually part one of my two-part interview with Colt King. Colt was a great guest, and I had a lot of fun talking to him. I was initially going to put it out as one interview, and then because I'd stop it and record it in sections. So when I put all the sections together and looked, it was like a little over 3 hours, and I didn't think we'd actually talked that long, but and I just kind of I probably could have put it out in one, but. I don't know. I've just been kind of trying some stuff here. I know normally I've had other interviews that have been 2.5, 2:45, and whatever, and that's fine, and they do well and stuff. But I think I'm going to try to streamline it down a little more going forward. We'll see how that works. We'll see. For the regular listeners out there, tell me what you guys think. Is it just put it all out at once, or is two parts, or what have you? I mean, let me know. Regardless, it doesn't really matter to me. It's whatever you guys like, but I'm just trying out something a little different here. So we'll do it in two parts. So normally Wednesday is interview day, of course, and then Sunday I usually release like a solo episode, a rant shit show Sunday, as it's been commonly referred to as. But it's a rant episode where I'll just pick topics, maybe something that's happened during the week or what have you, or if I find an old article or whatever. So. Whatever. So there's no rhyme or reason to what I'm talking. There's probably no rhyme or reason to what I'm saying either. But it's a potpourri show, if you will. Well, number of different topics come up from a number of different eras. So, but obviously with this being in two parts, today will be part one, and I will release part two on Sunday. So definitely come back and check that out. If a lot of you guys are probably tuning in for the first time because of Colt King is the guest. So welcome. Thank you for checking the show out. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you come back. And, I know everyone and their dog's got a podcast these days. So hopefully you enjoy what you hear here, and the Fourth Line Voice can get put in the rotation, in your rotation, and be on the playlist. But and for the new listeners, again, I encourage you to check out my back catalog. I've had John Morasty on, Steve McIntyre, Joey Tedarenko, Clark Wilm, Roman Volpat, on and on. For the UK fans out there, I've had Zach Fitzgerald on, Jason Goulet, Matt Nickerson, Joe Grimaldi, Riley Emerson, Mike McWilliam, Sean McMorrow. So a lot of great guests that have, and I'm really proud of those interviews, and I definitely hope you check them out. Other than that, if you're on social media, Fourth Line Voice on Twitter as well as on Facebook. And the big one, of course, is my YouTube channel. Again, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. I have over 2,500 fights on my channel, from junior to pro. Everything's sorted, so whatever league you're looking for, just go to a little search engine, OHL, NHL, IHL, AHL, blah, blah, blah. It's all there, and I think it'll definitely entertain you for a while, like and subscribe to the channel, and that way, and you'll hit the little notification, and whenever I upload something, you won't miss a punch. But right now, actually, we're in the process of moving, so a lot of all my fight DVDs are sort of stuck in a Rubbermaid tub in my parents' basement right now, as we're kind of clearing out our condo here. So not a lot of stuff getting uploaded right now, but hopefully here we can sell this place and and get back at her here shortly. But in the meantime, like I said, over 2,500 fights, so it'll definitely keep you engaged anyway. But, yeah, guys, like I said, I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 50 shows on the network. All the NHL teams are represented, so whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. And like I said, those guys are busy right now, of course, with the expansion draft going about to happen, and, of course, the entry draft about to happen, and free agency, and blah, 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 all that fun stuff that's going on. Each individual show is covering it from the perspective of that team. So, yeah, definitely check that out. And then for my off-network friends, of course, I have old Jolton Joel Lozito over at the Coliseum Chronicles. Get rid of Lozito! Is an Islander enforcer-based podcast. He just actually, speaking of UK, he just had Ben Wilson, or Ben Wilson. Listen to me, I'm still in the Bob Probert Invitational Tournament here. He just had Ben Olsen on, and it was a great interview. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, of course, he played in the Western Hockey League and then in the North America and the American League in the East Coast. And then, of course, went over to Europe and played in Coventry. So that was it was a really good interview, and Ben told some great stories. So I definitely encourage you to check that out. And again, check out Joe's back catalog. Mick Fakoda, Jason Strugwick, Aaron Bolton, Aaron Asham, great guests. And Joe's been around. Like I said, he's, been involved in the game for a long time. For the older listeners, if you remember the Bad Boys books, the Stan Fischler books, what is there, four of them? Three of them for sure. I think there's four, though. Joe was a big part of those, did a lot of, contributing to those, as well as the Tough Guy magazines back in the 90s and early 2000s. So, for the older fans out there, they'll definitely remember, Joe's work. And, and Joe's a good dude. Check him out. I mean, King of Long Island, man. The guy's got his own merchandise, and he just came back on vacation. I heard he was out on the boardwalk there, and he's definitely out there, rocking Coney Island in his Coliseum Chronicle capris and sun hat, and like I said, Joe's been doing the yoga in the park here recently, so he's really he's working hard on maintaining that girlish figure. So yeah, he wants to show it off. So yeah, he went on vacation and sun's out, guns out. So definitely check out Joe Lozito and the Coliseum Chronicles. Joe's a good dude. Alec over at the Five for Fighting podcast, he's back. Yes, he's really making his presence felt. He did a live Facebook show the other night in the Enforcer Appreciation Group. But no, definitely another guy. Check out his back catalog in all seriousness. Segroy, Yablonski, Rob Ray. I mean, Alec has done a great job. And took a bit of a hiatus here. But no, he's back now. So I'm really looking forward to what he can do. Like I always say, we bust each other's balls all the time and whatever, all of us guys. But it's always good to have more enforcer-minded podcasts out there. I think all three of us now. So, Alec does a great job, and I'm glad he's back, and I'm really looking forward to the content that he'll produce here coming shortly. But, other than that, guys, I didn't mean to leave him out, but Fred and Dave over at the Slewfoot Hockey Show, another current hockey show, but I like those guys, and I stay informed, but I don't have to watch. They keep me informed, so I appreciate that. But definitely check those shows out. But guys, other than that, like I said, for the new listeners, going forward, it's always Wednesday is interview day, like I said earlier, and then Sunday is my rant episode. But not this week. Part two will be coming out on Sunday with my interview here with Colt. But guys, hang in. I think throughout the summer here, I have some great guests lined up. And I think you guys will really enjoy it. And a bunch of them, a couple of them for sure have never done a podcast interview before. So we'll be breaking some new ground and getting some new stories. So I'm really looking forward to bringing those interviews to you guys. I actually took next week off, so I have holidays coming up. So I have an interview done already, so I will have another interview for you on next Wednesday. And really a young kid, really interesting. Played in the Western Hockey League, then played Junior A, then played university hockey and then pro for a little bit. So he's seen hockey from all the different leagues and from all the different perspectives and different gameplay. And, we talk about that. And, it's a young person's, I always say I have all these old timers on my show, not that Colt's an old timer, but I mean, most of the guys I talk to on the show are 40s and 50 years old, right? But so when you have a, was he 26? So it was a little different anyway. But he was a great guest. So I think you guys will really enjoy that. But I'll let you know once I got to edit it all and stuff. But I'll let you know Sunday who the guest is. But in the meantime, how about we get to part one with Colt King? Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you on Sunday. All right. Here we are on the fourth line voice on the line. OHL alumni, 10-year pro, number 45, Colt King. Colt, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, thank you.
Excellent. Well, thanks. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. And you're a very requested guest. So I did some research on you, and I think I'm going to hit you with some names that you haven't thought of for a while, and we'll timeline your career and tell a few stories. Does that sound good to you?
You betcha.
All right. We'll start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised, and where did you play your minor hockey?
Well, born and raised in Thunder Bay. Spent all my time here playing, growing, developing. Moved away when I was 15. Went and played down in St. Thomas. Played Junior B. The idea for that was to kind of try and get out of Thunder Bay just to kind of get a little more exposure, Southern Ontario, more OHL teams and whatnot. So I went down there, 15, and then from there was drafted to the OHL. So the rest is history.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, yeah, just looking that up, the St. Thomas Stars there in the Ontario Junior League there. 41 games, 24 points, 89 PIMs. I'd imagine you had a few tilts.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think I only had two that year.
Did you have to go with the full cage?
Oh, yeah, I had the full cage on. There was, you know, and we had a couple guys in our team that handled that. So as a kid, I kind of took advantage of that. Plus, I had the birdcage on. So was, you know, I added a little more fearlessness to my game. But yeah, I mean, for me at the time, I didn't think much of it. I just went and tried to play. And I think the fights I ended up getting into were guys that were very close to my age at the time. So it's not like I was fighting anybody older or anything like that. It was more kind of just for the developmental side of things, and kind of fighting was in the back of my mind sort of thing. I mean, my favorite part of hockey was the body checking. So that was the one thing I always tried to focus on. And yeah.
Like, were you like all like just growing up as a kid, were you always kind of a physical kid though?
Yeah, I had the luxury of growing pretty fast as a kid. I was always kind of head and shoulders above all the other kids. I mean, I only finished off at 6'2", but I bet you, I think I was 6'1 in grade 8. So,
yeah,
you know, I sprouted pretty quick. But yeah, it was just, you know, growing up watching those Don Cherry Rock'em Sock'em hockey videos. There was nothing more exciting than the big body checks, and I just. For me as a kid, that was just something I always just, I loved it. I mean, the goals were one thing, fighting was another, but the body checks are what excited me the most. And actually the first year of body contact, minor hockey politics, but actually there was who actually is one of my good friends now. I played against him. His parents actually tried to get me thrown out of the league. Because they said I was too violent. even though, I wasn't hurting kids. I wasn't going out of my way to do anything. I mean, I was filling the net at the time, too. So it wasn't like I was just out there trying to body check guys. But if somebody had their head down and they had the puck, yeah, I was going through them.
Well, some things never change. I think that lasted right to the last game of your career, too. But Well, yeah, so you get to St. Thomas, and like you said, it's like, now there's a league full of guys your size, and, you're the young guy, and there's fighting and all that stuff. I noticed, one of your teammates was, Drew Fatta.
Yeah. We had the same agent at the time, so that's kind of how that worked out, that him and I ended up on the same team. It's just, through our agent, he worked that out, but, yeah, I was friends with Drew for a few years. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm not friends with him anymore. We kind of lost touch, but yeah, we were good friends there for a few years. And he was just like me. He grew really fast. He was a big kid. He was a big, strong kid. And, you know, he obviously went on to have a pretty good career too. So, yeah, it was kind of funny how that worked out.
Yeah. Well, I noticed one of the characters in that league that was running around, I don't have it in front of me, but he was one of the league leaders in penalty minutes, was Segroy. Playing to Tecumseh. Do you remember Mike Segroy at that time?
yeah. I didn't say much to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't say much to him. But yeah, you know, there was sure some men in that league, and you know, like, again, I was pretty big, but you know, like, I was nowhere near physically what these guys were, and it was a good learning experience, and it was good developmental wise, just to kind of I could have played AAA here in town and things could have been fine, and I'm sure things might have worked out maybe the same way as they did getting drafted and whatnot, but I was really glad I did. It was a good experience. The Billet family that took me in, I'm still very close with. They were amazing people. And, you know, I met some amazing people, had some great coaches, and yeah, it was a great experience for me.
Excellent. Well, like you said, you, used it as a, like, obviously the stepping stone to the OHL, and so Guelph picks you up, and, you know, so you're 99-2000, a 16-year-old, Colt King rolls into Guelph for his first, Ontario Hockey League, camp. How did, your initial training camp go, and well, you obviously made the team, so it went well, but what were your first impressions of the Guelph Storm?
Well, my first impressions were a little set back, we'll say, I guess. I always spent my summers as a kid at this time being active, right? Like, I didn't necessarily focus on working out or being in the gym. I mean, at the time, I was only a 15-year-old kid, and my group of friends, my family and all that, no one, I mean, my uncle played, he played for the Twins, like I said earlier, but for the most part, that's the real only, anybody that's made it anywhere hockey-wise, that, again, that I knew within my internal group, but then he didn't even go anywhere. He ended up just playing Thunder Bay. But I showed up to camp, and we had a fitness test, and I was like, oh shit, what do we got to do? And I've never been a runner, and they're like, you got to go do whatever it was, the 5K around the track or whatever it was under a certain time. And I was like, are you kidding? I'm like, I haven't ran that long and whatever, right? Just, you know, whatever. So I got through it and all that. But that was a bit of an eye opener of kind of the preparation that you need to kind of have and be ready for, and what they're kind of expecting out of you, sort of thing. And, I mean, that was all fine and good. Again, I was young, so I could have slept in all day and got out of the couch and been able to do it. I was young. I had it in me, but now I think I'd get around the track maybe 200 meters and I'd be have my hands on my knees, but yeah, no, it was good. The preseason games, we played against Brampton, and they had Jay Harrison on their team, and hit him from behind. I remember this distinctly, because as soon as I hit him, I was like, oh shit, like, that was like, it was unintentional, of course, and all that, but I just right away, I'm like, ah, oh, fuck, I didn't mean to do that kind of thing. And he was okay. And he was okay because he hopped up and tried to take my head off. But, yeah, that was my first OHL, welcome to the OHL greeting. So me and Harrison had a bit of a scrap, and it went pretty well for me. And I mean, he was a big tough kid, and I think he was a little bit surprised, and kind of surprised myself with the way I handled it. But so that was kind of my eye-opening experience to the OHL.
Well, like, leading up to that, like, I mean, obviously, you're not going in naive. Well, you'd played Junior B the year before, but, I mean, obviously, you know, the fighting's there and everything else. Did you do anything to prepare? Like, did you ever take any boxing or do anything prepare fight-wise? Or just like, well, we'll see how it, you just sort of get a crash course as your career went on?
Well, I've never taken any classes. I've never taken boxing, MMA, anything. I've never taken any sort of fighting classes or anything like that. For me, I was never set on fighting. My goal was to play and to put up points and be a power forward, whatever that is. If I fought, gotten a couple fights here or there, whatever, it is what it is. It comes with the territory. If I'm throwing body checks, people are going to want to come and, you know, get retribution at some point. So I never planned for it. It is what it is. If it happened, it happened. And I just, thankfully, either I had a really hard head or it kind of came natural to me. But the only ever real practice I did was when I would be in practice and me and the boys would, you know, kind of goof around and hockey fight. And, you know, I think probably what helped me a little bit was I got an older brother, and all of his friends used to kick the shit out of me my whole childhood, and I used to play with them growing up. So, you know, I was pretty much the same size as most of them, but, you know, they would definitely give me the treatment and toughen me up. So I think that helped. But I mean, for as of training and all that, no, like I said, I never had. I think I took a couple boxer size classes once, maybe, but that was about it.
Well, this is kind of an interesting point. Before we kind of go on with your career, is like, I was actually going to ask you about this later, but I mean, we're talking about it now. So, you kind of brought it up in terms of wanting to be a power forward and everything else. Do you think at the time, like maybe later on after the OHL and stuff, if you had maybe focused, more as being sort of the fighter enforcer type, do you think that would have helped you more, or did you just not have that? Like, you just didn't want any part of that? Like, looking back on it now.
I certainly think that if I would have said, you know what, I'm going to devote myself to this. This is my in. This is my angle. This is how I'm going to do it. This is what I have to do. Then, yeah, I could try. But I never wanted that. I wanted to play. I wanted to be relied on. I wanted to be a go-to guy. I wanted to be someone that the coaches wants to put on, you know, this kind of thing, right? So I never really focused any of my attention on that. You know, like, my fighting in my days was because it was coming to find me, or two, I was trying to stick up for somebody on my team. Generally, the fights I got into. Yeah. As I progressively got older, then it came about the timing aspect. It came about, okay, momentum shift or whatever the case may be, right? The team needs it, or we got to send a message, whatever the case may be, right? Then it started to kind of get into the more kind of the tactical side of it. But for the most part, probably up until about, I don't know, the first few years of my pro career was, you know, I didn't think anything of it. I was going to make it as a player, and that's where my focus lied. So,
yeah, like, because it's interesting. Because, well, we'll talk about him later. But I mean, you played a few seasons in the OHL with old Biz Nasty, with Bissonnette, and Paul has said a number of times that, like, he was never really a fighter in junior. He's sort of like you. He'd do it when he needed to and whatever. And then when he got to pro, he made that decision, that conscious decision to, well, Pittsburgh doesn't have anybody. If I decide to go be the enforcer, I might be able to make the NHL. And he did. So I was just, it's interesting as you're saying that, it sounded like what he was talking about in one of the episodes. I was listening to him talk about it. And, yeah, I was just wondering what you thought of that, but well, there we go.
Well, yeah, and he's a good example of that for sure, because I mean, I forget when he got drafted to the OHL, but I think he got drafted first or second round. He got drafted decently high. He was a big kid. He was a strong kid. But again, I'm not trying to shoot him down, but like he didn't have a ton of skill on the forefront. You know, he was just a meat and potatoes guy. You know, he was a hardworking kid. You know, everybody liked him and whatnot. And, but yeah, he didn't fight a lot. He didn't put up a lot of points. He was just kind of, you know, doing his job, we'll say. You know, so it was, we lost touch over the years, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing him fighting guys in the NHL, and I'm just like, whoa, where did this come from? And then, yeah, you know, you look into it and you do your research and you come to look at it, you know, is Pims in the American League and all that. You're like, wow, he did. He made that conscious decision to say, you know what, this is my way in. So this is the road I got to take, and it's going to be a bumpy road, but here we go. Just buckle up.
Yeah.
You know what? Another guy too is, Carcillo. I played with Carcillo in Sarnia, and he was a guy who probably had, I think, I don't know, four or five fights in the OHL. Like, the guy never fought. And then same thing, all of a sudden he's knocking guys out in the NHL. Like, who the fuck is this guy? Where was this?
we'll get to him. I got a few questions to ask you about that, about that time period. But so your first year, you're in Guelph there, and you know, and the OHL at that time, well, every year, but some of the characters, I was just sort of looking at the rosters and just throwing out some names for a few folks, or that names that the folks listening will know. Of course, I have to ask you because of his name, in Kingston, Avery, Sean Avery was playing. Do you remember playing against Avery?
Yeah. Well, he didn't have that reputation back then, right?
No.
I mean, he was an effective player. He was a good player, but he wasn't who he turned in to be, You know, back then he was a lot more skilled. He was better than a lot of players and whatnot, right? So he was relied on for the points and whatnot, and you know, he still had his mouth. So obviously, you're born with that, right? That's something you don't just learn, but he was definitely a guy that you noticed, though, whether he's playing or he's chirping or whatever, right? But he's definitely a noticeable player.
Yeah, and the league leader in scoring that year was, of course, now the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah. I didn't see much ice time against him.
I was going to say, he was a hell of a player back in the day, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was putting up 100 points every single year, effortlessly. They had a good team, though. He was on Barry, and he had Mike Jefferson, who's now Mike Danton.
Yeah.
And who was the other guy on their line? But they all had like 100 points like 3 years in a row or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, over on the penalty minute side, of course, you got Brett Cloutier leading the way, and then Big Earn, old Brian McGrattan, and Kip Brennan, and Nick Jones, and yeah, there were some tough dudes floating around that league at the time.
Yeah, you definitely mind your P's and Q's, that's for sure. You know who you're talking to if you're out there. You pick and choose, but yeah, there were some big boys floating around there.
Well, I know, go ahead.
I was going to say, I ended up rooming with Nick Jones, actually. When he got traded to Guelph, my second year he got traded there, and he ended up being my roommate. He was a great guy, but yeah, he was an animal.
Well, he was like one of those, yeah, like, see, being out west, of course, and at the time period, this is before YouTube and internet TV, and like, we never saw you guys, right? But I remember getting some OHL footage later on, and you never hear his name thrown around much, because I don't know if he played, I don't think he played pro after, but like, Jones could bang, man. Like, I've seen some of his fights, like, he pounds guys.
Yeah, oh yeah, and he wasn't that big either. I think he was only 6 feet, maybe 6'1", tops. Wasn't a very big stature, like maybe 190 probably. When he got traded to us, he had a staph infection. in his hand from a fight he had been in. But that guy was a warrior. He was definitely a warrior. I seen him come home. His hands are just, he barely can close his hands. The next night he's going out and doing it. Yeah, what the fuck you doing, man? Well, I don't know. Had to fight. Why'd you have to fight? I don't know. I had to fight. That's what I got to do. Well, all right. So that was my first kind of like, well, you know, you didn't have to. Well, yeah, I kind of had to, because at that time he knew, right? He already understood what he needed to do and how he's going to stay there and all that, right? Where I'm still a bit naive. I'm just like, wow, you didn't have to fight the guy. You can barely put your shoes on right now, but yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, looking at your fight card, the second name that pops up there, and Nate Kaiser.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, I'm pretty lucky I got him at the beginning of his career. He was certainly battering guys at the end.
Yeah, well, he's still battering him. I think he still fights MMA. I think he still fights in the cage.
Yeah, is he actively fighting still? I know he was doing it a couple of years ago, but...
I think so. If not, I was just looking at his Facebook the other day because I was gonna send him a thing about asking to come on the show. And you see, he looks like $1 million anyway. It looks like he could still kick people's asses anyway. You know,
I'm sure. He was definitely a tough kid. I fought him twice.
Yeah,
and he was tough. We were both young and just kind of, you know, whatever. Still learning at that time.
Yeah. Well, then you had a real solid playoff fight with James Ramsey.
Yeah, you know what? And I think that was kind of, I think that actually might have been the fight that kind of
got your name out there.
Put me on the path I ended up taking. My first year, our coach was Paul Gillis. He played in the show, coached for a few years. He was a bit of a goof.
To cut you off, you're the third person that said this on that podcast. you're not alone.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was a bit of a goof. And so my only justification of the whole season is that we had a bit of an older group, and we had a very good group. So I didn't play much my first year in the OHL. I think I was maybe getting four shifts a game sometimes maybe a little less. We weren't allowed to handle the puck after the red line. It was just strictly dump and chase. Oh, it was brutal. There was no development. It was just basically kick us to the side and then bag skate us. It was like we were the black aces all year. And when I say us, I mean all the rookies, all the younger players. It was terrible. It was terrible. The guy was just a fucking goof. And it was funny, too, because he called me because he was coaching in Odessa. And he called me a couple times because he wanted me to go and play there. And I was like, you fucking kidding me? And I hung up on him. Don't call me.
that answers that. They'll cross that off. That was going to be my next question. Was about Gillis actually? Because like I said, you're Marasti and I can't remember who the other guy was. But nobody's had anything positive to say about him on this show yet. So.
He's completely arrogant, man. All I can remember is him talking about how many points he had in the NHL and all that. And at the time, again, like we're talking about the internet and whatnot. And I had no way of going and calling him on his bluff and, you know, saying, you know what, you really didn't do that. And then, you know, you come to see the videos on YouTube of him fucking turtling up and running away from people and just being a rat. And it's like, oh, man, I wish I would have played against you.
Well, that leads into the next season. Of course, you go back to Guelph and you got a new coach. You got Jeff Jackson's there this time. And was there sort of... And obviously you played because you came out 65 games, 52 points, 129 minutes, at 17. What was your going into that year? Were you pretty confident? And obviously it looks like you had a hell of a year.
Well, I just kind of knew what was at stake, right? I was going into my draft year.
Yeah.
I've already experienced the training camp and all that, and kind of knowing what you need to do. So, you know, I tried to prepare myself a little bit better. And I was lucky. He put me on a line with Martin St. Pierre and Dustin Brown. So, I mean, I pretty much just went to the net with my stick on the ice, and Marty would find me back door, or I'd pick up rebounds from Dustin or whatever, right? And it was just, it was a good year. We had a good team as well and same sort of thing. But, you know, we were three young guys. We had a new coach with a different mentality. He played the younger guys and all this stuff. So, you know, I just tried to do the best I could. So that year I had, I forget what it was, but I think I had like 17 goals at Christmas time. Like I was on a tear. I was doing, and then after Christmas, I think I only ended up with like 8 goals. Something stupid like that. I just, for some reason, couldn't put it in the net anymore. It was just one of those things. Still ended up getting the 20, so that was good, but, could have been much better. Could have helped my draft status, but it is what it is, right? So, but yeah, it was definitely a different year, and it was different because, you know, like for me, every coach I'd played for at that point too had been somebody that like played. Like I just saw, I didn't see Jeff Jackson as somebody who ever played. He was just an X and O's guys. So it was a little bit different for me.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned him, of course, Dustin Brown, and he's playing in the league at that time at 15 years old. And of course, he's gone on to have, you know, what great NHL career, 1,200 games. And, you know, when he rolled in at 15, you know, yeah, I think he's an American too from New York. What did you think? Well, what were your initial impressions of Dustin Brown? And, you know, and what do you think?
Well, it was at first it was frustrating because all these rookies are getting the chance to play, and me and all the other rookies just rode the pines for a full season. So you're sitting there, you're like, well, fuck, why are these guys getting all this exposure and all this time to play, chances and all this stuff? Yeah, you turn the puck over, you don't see the ice for two periods is the way I learned, right? So, you know, and I'm not saying he was wrong. I wish he would have been there for my rookie year kind of thing. So, but they came in and they were, I mean, the kid was talented right off the hop, and he was the one thing I remember is how strong he was on his skates. I remember a couple guys taking runs at him in training camp and him sitting guys down, and I was like, well, okay, this kid's got a little bit in him. So, and he was super quiet. I think he said 100 words all season. He was super quiet. But he was a really nice kid and all that, and, you know, got along with everybody. Didn't say much to anybody, but he was a nice guy and all that. Worked really hard and just filled the net. He had a hell of a shot.
Yeah. So are you surprised at 1,200 NHL games?
maybe a little, only because of his size. He's had a bit of an up and down career. I was more surprised to see him be a captain at as young as he was, just because from my experience with him is that he wasn't a leader. Again, I played with him when he was super young, but again, I see leaders as vocal guys and, you know, guys that, you know, are all always, you know, like they're a guy that everybody leans on. They're a captain is somebody that, you know, like if you're like, well, what are we going to do? All eyes fall on the captain, right? That's how I picture a captain. And, he just, again, when I played with him when he was young, so I just, you know, I was a bit shocking because I'm like, well, this kid doesn't say fuck all. So like, how is he getting the boys fired up in between periods, or, you know, is he talking to the guys, you know, like on the days off, just, you know, to, you know, get everybody to go to dinner together or whatever the case may be, right? So, good for him. He's had a really good career, and it's good to see that he's kind of bounced back these last couple of years and doing well and scoring some more goals too.
No, absolutely. Yeah, hell of a career. But, well, like you said, you're going into your draft year, and yeah, well, there you go. You know, fourth round, Colorado Avalanche. Were you surprised you went there? Did you think you were going to go sooner, later? Did you talk to a bunch of teams? Take me through the draft experience.
Yeah, I went to the, you know, the prospect game and all that stuff, and
yep.
I was rated 27th, if I can remember, in North America. I talked to, I think it was 17 teams I interviewed with. That was...
Did you have any weird interview? Like, I know Terry Ryan always tells the interview with Milbury, with the Islanders, that crazy interview. Did you have any goofy interviews with teams?
Nothing that was like, okay, nothing that made me leave the room saying, like, what the fuck was that or what just happened kind of thing. There was a few where I had to go do some fitness stuff. There was a few where there was five or six guys sitting on one side of the table and I was sitting on the other, like it was a job interview, and well, I guess it was, but there was nothing like that where I kind of left shaking my head or anything like that, or nobody ever tried to fight me or anything like that.
it was
definitely unnerving for seven, well, for me anyways at that age.
Yeah, well, like you said, you go with the Colorado Avalanche, you know, and of course, obviously, then you're going into did you go to main camp or was it rookie camp your first year?
Yeah, so my first year, I was actually set to fly on September 11th when the terrorist attacks happened.
Yeah,
so I was set to fly out that day. Obviously, all the flights were grounded and whatnot. So what ended up happening with the NHL, Colorado, they only brought in guys that were basically sitting on the fence that could make the team. A lot of the American League guys, you know, the first, second rounder kind of thing. They just said, no, the rest of you guys, whatever, you can't come just because of everything that's going on and all that. So I never even got to go to training camp my very first year. So then I went my second year of eligibility, and I was like a deer in headlights. I got there, and Danny Bois was drafted the fifth round. I think it was the fifth or sixth round. But anyways, right after me.
Yep.
And he's also from Thunder Bay, and he's a guy that I played a bit with growing up and played against growing up. And so we went to camp together, and him and I were both walking around the dressing room looking at all the guys' different sticks and equipment, and I remember I followed Joe Sakic around for a couple days in the dressing room just to see what he's doing. You know, Patrick Waugh is walking around, Peter Forsberg sitting there taping his stick. I was on a line with Peter Forsberg during one of the exhibition games during training camp, which I turned the puck over, I think, three times one shift, because all I did was I kept trying to pass it to him. I just wanted to get the puck over to him. I just kept turning it over. I was like, what a fucking idiot. I'm just like, this guy must think I'm just brutal now. But, it was awesome. I mean, I loved hockey, and it was so neat. Like, I didn't go into the camp, unfortunately, with the mindset that I was there to make the team. I just went there because I'm like, well, I got drafted, and if they want me, they're going to take me kind of thing, and I'm going to do what I can, of course, to show them to take me, but I was just like, holy shit, look at all these guys. Oh, they're not going to want to take me. Look who else is here, and that's one thing I never really had, is that kind of confident swagger of, you know, like, my shit don't stink, like a lot of guys that have made it, that shouldn't have made it, I think had that because they made it because they had that confidence and all that. But I don't know. I never really had that swagger. So I always kind of went in there uncertain. I never went in with that mindset of positivity and I'm going to do it and I'm going to make it and all that. I went in there. I'm like, holy shit, there's Patrick Waugh. Holy shit, there's Peter Forsberg. And I'm sitting beside Scott Parker in the dressing room. Like, is he going to reach over and punch me out? And thank fuck I'm on the same team as him.
So needless to say, you didn't challenge Parker in training camp.
No, I ended up fighting Jeff Paul.
Yep.
He He was a big guy. And this is my first experience with a left-hander. And so I had, at the end of the season prior, I got called up to Hershey at the end of my season just to go be in Black Ace. And Jeff Paul was there, and I got to know him, and he was a really nice guy, and, you know, we chatted a bunch and all that, and he was really friendly to me and all that. And so come training camp, again, like, I love the body check, so any chance I had, I was finishing my check, and I'm like, well, then that's one of my strengths, so I'm going to show these guys I'm going to finish my checks, and I'm going to throw some big hits. So Jeff Paul comes over and skates over to me and goes, Kinger, stop fucking running around. I'm like, man, I can't. This is the only thing I got going for me right now. He goes, well, you got to stop running around, man. And he goes, oh, we got to fight. I'm like, oh, shit. And so sure enough, next shift, I got a chance to lay somebody out. And I threw a big hit. And here comes Paul. I'm like, well, we got to go. So here we go. And whatever, we threw a couple right off the hop, and we were going fine and all that. Then he just crossed me up and started throwing lefts. And there was nothing I can do. I was helpless. He just fed me my lunch. And so I just kind of tried to pull him in as best I could, and he knew better, so he kind of just held on to me too and whatever else, and refs broke it up, and I think I had a black eye before I even left the ice, but I talked to him after and all that, and he made sure he'd come to check and see if I was okay and all that. Really good guy. But, you know, again, that's just part of hockey, and not a great showing on my part, but, you know, that's an experienced guy who's been in the American League fighting for a long time, and gave me a quick lesson.
But like Sackick and Forsberg and Wad Parker and all the guys, they were cool with you?
Well, they didn't say much to us.
There's definitely the pecking order was definitely there.
Well, but yeah, I mean, you look back though, you're just like, well, how many goofs have these guys seen coming in out of this dressing room for training camp, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, there's how many guys actually make it. So I think Cody McLeod, Cody McCormick, sorry.
Yeah.
Was the Cody McCormick and the first rounder, and I forget even who that was, were the only ones that made the team from my draft year. So, you know, and they had just won the cup 2 years prior too. So, I mean, it's not like there was a lot of open spots in that team, but, I mean, you got to figure, because, I mean, even with me playing pro with all the, you know, like, I didn't talk to everybody that came to training camp. You know, I would say hi to people, of course, but, you know, yeah. I just knew these guys were leaving, right?
Yeah. Well, so, the name you brought up, that's interesting. You brought up Cody McCormick. I know you had a few tilts with him the next year. Was there any heat over training camp or anything, or is it just something that happened?
No, not at all. Actually, he's another Indigenous guy, so we kind of actually meshed and clicked a little bit. But there was no animosity with us fighting or anything like that. It was just purely hockey.
Yeah,
it was just purely hockey. The way the game was going, maybe I threw another hit, whatever the case may be. I don't know, but I can't remember. But none of them, like him and I fought. I know. I remember they were both like heat of the battle. It wasn't staged. Like, hey, you should go or anything like that. Or, you know, it was nothing. It was just purely hockey. That's all that was.
Well, so the following year, you go back to Guelph, and but you play 20 games, and then you're traded to North Bay. Was that something you asked for, or did it come as a surprise, or what happened there?
No, I don't think Jeff Jackson liked me. I wasn't fitting into his mold. I was actually pretty bummed out when that happened. They were hosting Memorial Cup that year, so I was a little bummed out. I didn't ask for it, but that's my guess, is I don't think Jeff Jackson liked me that much, so he sent me walking and sent me to North Bay, and it was tough. I got to North Bay, and, you know, they're a losing team and all that, and obviously we ended up folding at the end of the year, but it was good and bad. The coach, Mike Kelly, awesome coach, great guy, played with Chris Thorburn, and that's where I played with Biznet at first.
Yeah.
I knew Thorby too, because we also had the same agent, so we went to a bunch of summer training camps, and stuff like that. So I already knew Thorby really well. Jeff Doyle was there. But yeah, we ended up playing. We had to play, I don't think this is in any of your stat sheets. Maybe it is, I don't know. But we ended up playing a playoff game at the end of the season just to see if we would actually make the playoffs, just because of the way the seeds ended up. And we ended up playing Kingston, and Josh Gratton was on the team, and I ended up fighting him.
Yep.
And then I ended up fighting McCutcheon, I think. Anyways, yep. I ended up getting in two fights that game, and I got a hat trick, and then ended up making the playoffs.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, how'd the fight with Gratton? How'd the fight with him go?
Yeah, it went pretty good for me. It went pretty good.
Hey, you won, you again, won. That's, again, you know.
Again, we were much younger, and you know.
Yeah.
You know, who knows, things might be different now, but yeah, at the time, yeah, you know, I had the upper hand, and I think that's also kind of the big reason why the push is why we had a good chance at winning that. Yeah, that was one of my more memorable games that I've played.
Well, two fights and a hat trick, absolutely. Well, yeah. one name that's on your fight card from that year that everybody listening will know, he was in Oshawa, was Sean McMorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this is where I'm still kind of thinking I'm a player, you know, and I'm not fighting guys like, you know, guys that are, you know, at the time just purely fighting, right?
Yep.
So that was one of those kind of, I don't want to look bad in front of the boys and say no and look like a chicken shit. It didn't really affect the game, so I'm just like, well, why kind of thing, but he was just content on going, and I mean, he might hate me saying this, but I was definitely at the end of a shift when it happened too, so but whatever, it was fine. He's definitely a big tough guy, so I held in there, that's for sure. But
yeah, well, and then their next fight after that is with former teammate there, Drew Fatta. You fought him.
Yeah. Well, that was one of those just purely hockey.
Yeah.
I think we had a laugh about it after, actually, because I don't even think that's one of those. I didn't even know who I was fighting at the time. And then I'm like, oh, it's Fatsy. What the hell's going on here? And so we had a chuckle about it after the game. And yeah. But again, that's hockey. That's the way it goes.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, that's the way hockey used to go.
So. Well, yeah. That's a whole other story, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so like you said, North Bay fold, and then like, so did they fold, and then Saginaw, you find yourself in the brand new OHL team, the Saginaw Spirit, with Dennis DeRoger, legendary coach Dennis DeRoger, but what did you think about Saginaw, and were you like, what is it like? Because, of course, you play six games, you have 6 points, and then you're off to Oshawa. Again, was that something like, get me out of here?
Not yes and no. I wasn't saying I want out of here or anything like that. I was certainly glad to be traded. But, you know, I was with pretty much the same group of guys we were in North Bay, but, you know, now we're in Saginaw and things are a bit different. So, I don't know. Saginaw at the time wasn't really a great place to play, so I don't know. I was okay with it, that's for sure.
Well, like you said,
I don't know the reason behind that one. I can't say for rhyme or reason as to why I was traded. Again, like you said, I mean, I had 6 points in six games, so it's not like I had 0 points in six games, so whatever, it is what it is.
Well, I know we briefly talked about him there, and you've played with him now for a season at this point as Bissonnette. When you see the spit and chiglets, Paul, Biz, how far removed is that from the guy that was sitting in the locker room in Saginaw with you?
Oh, no, that's who he is. He's definitely not a character. What you see is who he is.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember, actually, is that he used to do a raptor, he used to love doing that impression where he'd run around the locker room like a raptor. I mean, the boys loved it. I thought it was hilarious. But that's just always the one thing that sticks out in my mind every time I think about him or whatever. I always just picture him doing the raptor.
So when you're like, so when you see him on Spit and Chiglets, or you see him doing his biz shtick, that's him. You're saying
that's him. That's his personality. Maybe a little inflated, just because you know you got to be a character now.
Well, yeah, you got to turn the volume up a little bit. Yeah,
yeah, you're right. But I mean, no, that's what you see is what you get. That's him.
Did you guys get along?
Oh yeah, he's a great guy. He got along with everybody. My time I spent with him, I have nothing bad to say about him. That's for sure. He got along with everybody. He worked hard. He was fun to be around. He made guys laugh. He didn't ever call anybody out or he didn't do anything like that. And again, he was young. So, but whatever. I mean, doesn't matter how young you are, if you're, you know, you're born with your attitude, right? So, I mean, if he was always a positive guy and all that, that's who he is.
Well, there you go, Spit and Chiglets fans, you heard it here. But you get shipped to Oshawa, and I mean, you know, obviously a legendary franchise in the Ontario Hockey League with a history, and George Burnett is the coach who's been around. You get there, you're with Nathan Horton and Ben Eager and Gostopoulos and all them. What was your impressions of Oshawa, and did you like it?
Yeah, I liked Oshawa. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, playing for George was good. He's a good coach. He definitely tries to work with people. He'll talk to people. He'll call you in. He'll tell you your shit. This is how we get better. This is what I need from you. But then, you know, you definitely don't leave that meeting feeling like shit. He'll tell you, he'll give you some positives or whatever. I like him. I thought he was a good coach. I have nothing but respect for him. So, there were some good players on that team. Ben Eager. I remember Ben Eager because obviously I played against him for a couple of years already. But when I got to the change room with him, he was jacked. Like I hadn't seen anybody that I played with so far that was as physically built as what he was. He was just huge, and I'm just like, holy fuck! Like. But it was just one of those, he's a genetic freak. He was just born like that. I bet he can go and eat 25 cheeseburgers and not gain a pound kind of thing. The guy was just, he was just huge. But, he was a good guy, good player, tough.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because it was like, I remember that was one of the tapes that I had gotten when I go back to the old VHS days, but it was an OHL. I think it was 02-03. Yeah, it was. It was, and he is all over that tape, like running around and fighting everybody. And it was, and at the time, again, it's like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, and it was like, So I'm like watching a couple of these tapes, and I became like an instant Ben Eager fan. I'm like, this guy's awesome. And I think, and people listening, you know, maybe that don't follow the junior scene or whatever, and they just look at the NHL stuff, and, you know, you see Ben Eager, and, I mean, you know, he played 400 games in the NHL, but, he never put up any, you know, he was a hitter, fourth line guy, right? And he never really put up those offensive numbers, but, yeah, like you said, he was a real solid player in the Ontario Hockey League.
Oh, yeah, he was scoring 30-plus goals a year. I mean, the comparison for today's game would be, like, Josh Anderson, but a lot tougher.
Yeah.
So yeah. The guy could skate like the wind. He was very skilled, good hands, had a really good shot, he could score, he could make a play, he could hit, he could do everything. But yeah, it was just again one of those things. You got a bit older, you gotta fill a role, and so yeah, that was what he ended up doing.
Well, like you said, first round pick, right? 23rd overall to Phoenix. I mean, you know, you're not drafting lumps in the first round. I mean, you know, he had the skills for sure.
Oh, no question. Yeah. But he was, I don't want, I'm not trying to put him down, but, you know, like for me, he was definitely a guy who was a gamer. He wasn't a guy who was going to strike fear in a lot of people. He did in a sense where he was big and strong and fast and hits and all that stuff. But, like, as for somebody his size and somebody else who's fighting, no one, like, I don't think there was a ton of guys that were necessarily afraid of him. But, I mean, to have him on your team, I was like, man, this guy's unreal. He skates 100 miles an hour. He works his nuts off. He hits it. He fights everything. That's the thing. He fought everybody that wanted to fight him. So, you know, I tip my hat to him for sure. He was a good guy. He was a really good guy, too.
Yeah. Well, and then we'll talk about some of your tilts, because you had a pretty big fight year that year, actually. But one of the fights, and like you said, big dude. And again, for the folks that watch the NHL, I mean, you say this guy's name and, you know, some fight fans, I mean, they'll snicker and whatever, and, oh, he's a joke, you know, or whatever, but he wasn't. In the Ontario Hockey League, Zach Storrentini was a bad dude.
Yeah, he was, you know what, as I just described Benny, that's the same. Storrentini was the same way, except Storrentini didn't have any skill. He skated 100 miles an hour. He did everything right, but he just didn't have any skill. He couldn't handle a puck. He couldn't do anything. He was, in my mind, a brutal hockey player, but he's effective because he was just a wrecking ball. But, yeah, when I fought him, actually, and I wish I would have fought him again, but when I fought him, I had fought, I think it was... So the reason he wanted to fight me was because I fought someone on his team the last time we had played them. And it was very recent. I think it was only a few games before, if I can remember. But I ended up smashing my hand really hard on the guy's helmet to the point where my right hand, they still, from that fight, my knuckles are all misshapen, we'll say, from that particular fight. So when I fought Storrentini, I already had a bad hand, and when I fought him, I'm like, well, I can't throw my right hand, because my right hand's fucked, so if I throw my right hand, I'm either going to be in worse trouble, or I'm going to break my hand, I'm thinking. So I started to try to throw a left, and I had never thrown a left in a fight before that, and I threw a couple lefts, and I just opened up, and he caught me with one. I bounced up, but, I mean, by that time, it was over or whatever, right? So... He definitely called me with one on that one, and got me right in the eye socket. Because I can't see, everything's all blurry, and I can't see. I'm talking to the doctor, and whatever. Obviously, everything was fine, but the initial took about 5-10 minutes for everything to kind of come back. But so I didn't fight him that game because again my hand was fucked, and then now I took a big shot to the eye. So I'm like, I don't know if I can handle another one tonight. But I think I might have only played him like maybe one or two other times in my career after that. So I didn't have a lot of opportunity. But yeah, he went on to have a bit of a career. And I was a bit of surprised at that he made the NHL. But, you know, same thing. He was just somebody that just did the same thing night in, night out. So.
Yeah. Well, another guy that you fought against and you played against, you know, well, your paths would cross a few times, was Adam Keefe.
Yeah,
he was a solid player too.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's you know what? He's who would I compare him to? Yeah, he's. I mean, he's definitely a gamer. He fights anybody and everybody, and he's definitely undersized for the majority of the people he fights. So I mean, the guy's got brass balls. But yeah, the first time I tangled with him. I was wrestling with another guy first, and then he came in. So I started having kind of joust with both of them before I kind of got paired up with Keith. But yeah, it was kind of funny. I kind of laughed when I looked back at that one because it was a bit of a scrum, and I was wrestling with somebody else, and then Kiefer came in to help whoever I was wrestling with, and so then I basically started having to fight both these guys at the same time. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Well, after...
that fight didn't amount to much, though, from that point. It was just kind of wrestling for the most part.
Well, after this season, you know, you go back to Colorado camp. Were you a little more confident this time, or were you still sort of just, you know, sort of not naive, not the right word, but just sort of a little? Were you just laid back, too laid back still?
Yeah. Like again, like I didn't have the confidence that I was going there to make the team. I never really had that. I just had the I'm going to go there, I'm going to do what I can do, and if they like me, they like me. I'm obviously here for a reason kind of thing, and I don't want to stray away from my strengths. I'm not trying to come here and fight Scott Parker and all that, because I didn't want that to be my role. I just didn't want it, right? So,
yeah.
You know,
were they giving you any feedback, like, throughout, like, during, you know, your time in Oshawa where you're playing during the season? Are they telling you, hey, we'd like to see you do more of this or more of that, or is there nothing? Is there no communication? What's going on?
No, there was nothing like that until I was at the training camp, because there was one, I forget his name, but the main scout loved me. He loved me. He was the one that was really pushing for me, and he pulled me aside and he's like, you got to do this while we're here, when I was at training camp after I got beat up by Paul. He goes, you got to do this and you got to do this. And I'm just like, man, like, I'm trying. Like, this isn't fucking easy out here. I'm trying. It's much faster. These guys are more skilled. I mean, a guy that I would normally be able to finish a check on in junior, I'm not getting the chance to up here. So, I mean, it's not like I'm not trying to do it. So, you know, it was just one of those things. It was tough too, because I had an agent, and then my agent, who was Eddie Mio / Mike Barnett, right after this season, kind of during this season, started to fill the role as general manager, and I think he was director of player development or whatever it was. But both the agents that I had left and went and, again, were the general manager and something else with Phoenix now, because Gretzky was either the owner / coach or whatever, right? So they went with him. So then I ended up getting a new agent with that agency, and basically he lost my number. So, yeah. However, that ended up working out. I didn't care. I was just like, oh, whatever. I don't care. Not a big deal. Teams are still calling, this and that. I'm not too worried. So, I ended up going to Minnesota's camp the following year.
Yeah.
And that was, I did everything. They called me. I set everything up. I did everything myself. When I technically still had an agent, but my agent wasn't doing anything for me, so I did it all myself.
And how did that camp go?
That one went okay. Bugard was there and stuff, and that was like, holy shit, I hope I don't have to end up fighting this guy. Actually, somebody that, if you didn't know he was a hockey player, you would probably be very surprised to know that he actually plays hockey and fights. Just quiet, always wore glasses, just, you know, he just didn't seem like somebody who was a violent person, right?
Yep.
But then you obviously put him on the ice, and you know, everybody's alter ego takes over. But yeah, that camp went okay. Obviously never ended up signing, but yeah, it went okay. I ended up going to Vancouver's the next year, and that camp went pretty well. I got in a fight there and did okay, but then I went to Manitoba's camp, which I was fully confident. I'm going to make this team. I've talked to whoever, they're telling me I got a chance, right? So I'm going in there confident, whatever. Vancouver's camp is what it is. It's behind me now. So I'm going to go to Manitoba's camp, and I'm going to do awesome. So I went to Manitoba's camp, and I think I had 4 or 5 points in the 4 games that we played, and I fought twice. And they're like, yeah, we'll see you. We'll be in touch. Like, no, you won't. See you later.
Yeah, so like, how frustrating is that? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, if I had an agent that was helping me at the time, that might have helped a little bit or helped steer me in a different direction, or maybe there might have been a little more follow-up. Maybe I'll get a call-up throughout the season or something like that, right? And there was never anything. So, again, it was fine with me. I was like, whatever. You know, I'm still getting these chances. I'm still getting these looks. I'm still... You know, I'm still doing my thing. I'm still effective. So, you know, I'll keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, before we leave junior, after Oshawa, the following year, 2003-04, you end up in the Sioux, and then you're in Sarnia to end the year. Again, did you ask to leave Oshawa, or how did you end up in the Sioux? Were you surprised?
So, yeah. So that's, again, kind of, to follow up on the no agent thing, that's kind of how that worked out. Was that, well, do I go and try to play pro now? Because I had a lot of teams calling me to go and play. I was like, well, do I go and, you know, play in, again, the minors? Because that's who was calling me, the East Coast League, the Central League, and all that. Do you want to go do that? Or would you rather try to go back and play your OA year in junior and then see if anything develops from that or whatever the case may be? So I sat on it for a little bit, and I came in a bit late because I was obviously at training camp, and then I took a couple days after training camp was over to kind of figure it out. So I went to the Sioux, and I loved it. Awesome group of guys. We had a pretty good team. So the reason why I ended up getting a trade, though, was because we weren't making the playoffs.
Yeah.
So we weren't making the playoffs. So said, you know, what do you want to do? There's, in particular, Sarnia really wants you. Do you want to go there, or do you want to just stick it out here for the year? And I said, no, I definitely want to go there. They're doing well. They have a chance to win. They're definitely making the playoffs. They got a good team. So, yeah, there's always a chance to win. So yeah, definitely I'll go there. So I said, yeah, I'll definitely go. And went.
Well, and yeah, so you get to Sarnia, man, and that's you guys had a tough team. Like, I mean, you had like, you know, yourself, Mike Haley, Kelsey Wilson, Richard Clune, Carcillo, and Marco Capera leading the way. How tough was that, dude?
Yeah, so Marco. So my first experience with Marco was still when I was with Oshawa. So Ben Eager fought Carcillo this one game. And I was just thinking, what the fuck is this dude trying to fight Benny? Like, what's he doing? Because people that don't know, Marco's 5'8", 175 pounds. Ben Eager's, what, 6'3 or 6'4, 230 pounds. So you just look at these two, you're like, what the fuck is this guy thinking fighting Benny? Benny's just going to feed him his lunch. So they square up and they start doing their thing, and I'm like, oh, this little guy is hanging in there. And I just kind of started to chuckle because every time that Mark would throw a punch, obviously when he's starting to wind up for his next punch, Benny's trying to grab him so he can throw his punch. But when Benny's throwing his punch, his shoulder pads and jersey are coming up over Marco's head like he's like a turtle going back in his shell. Every time Benny would throw a punch, he's hitting him right in the chest pad of his shoulder pads. And then all of a sudden, Benny would, you know, try to lean back and load up for another one. And then Marco's head's popping out, and here comes another punch. And I just sat there like, what the fuck is going on here? This guy's like a little, he's like a turtle. He keeps popping his head in and out of his shell. Hey, he hung in there and did well. So I was like, oh, this guy, you know, he's actually pretty tough. I started looking into him. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's fighting everybody. He's got just whatever it was, 200-something pims. I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty legit. So then I ended up getting traded, and I started playing with him. And I was like, holy man, this guy's, like, he is legit. And he's tiny, though. He's tiny. So everybody wanted to fight him. Like, he could add three fights a game if he wanted to, just because everybody's looking at him being, well, you're just a little guy. I'm gonna give it to you. Nope. He was tough.
Yeah.
I think he had the year I got traded there and played with him, I think he ended up having 43 fights that year, I think it was.
Yeah, 300 penalty minutes. Yeah. And, well, and like you said, then, of course, you got Kelsey Wilson, Michael Haley, and Haley's a tough dude, too. And But then, of course, and Richard Clune, and, he was 16 at the time, just getting his feet wet. But again, but then, of course, as we brought up before with Carcillo. Now, Daniel Carcillo, who is definitely a polarizing figure these days, did you guys get along?
Yeah, we got along. We got along when I played. I really don't know how to describe him. He's fake. I'll say that. He's fake. He's not definitely not like Biznet, whereas what you see is what you get. Everything's a show. Everything's a front. Everything is poor me. That's the way his whole life is built on, is poor me. He's a heck of a player, very effective. I think he scored 30 goals multiple times. But just always in arguments with guys in the dressing room. Always some sort of drama. Always something. It wasn't just, you can just say, oh, like, what the fuck, what happened now? Oh, Jesus. Now, you know what I mean? It was just one of those things where it's like, man, just relax a little bit, or, you know, maybe stop being you. I don't know. But we got along, because, I mean, I got along with most people. But, yeah, there was definitely a few guys in the room that, you know, they had their beefs together. So I don't know. He was a guy that, again, like he surprised me quite a bit when he started fighting in the NHL, because I think he might have had one fight when I played with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, he's a polarizing figure, and I mean, you know, very outspoken these days, and I know, you know, him and I got into it on social media there a year or two ago, and yeah, but that was my interaction with him, didn't go too well, but you know, I respected what he did, played in the league, and, you know, had a hell of a career and everything, but yeah, I wasn't liking how he was approaching and saying things afterwards, but anyway, that was my experience with him, but
there isn't probably a lot of people in the hockey world that have a lot of positive experience with him. He's a poor me. He's always kind of looking for the easy way out, kind of thing.
Well, there we go. We'll leave it at that. That's our, But that wraps up, unfortunately, in Sarnia, you guys, you finished first in the West, and then unfortunately you lost in the first round that year.
That was pretty devastating, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that, no, go ahead.
We had a good team. We had a lot of skilled players. That was one of those teams where it was just a good balance. We had everything. But, you know, playoff time is a different story. I'm talking about Erie. They had a guy on their team, Brian Hamm. I don't know if he ended up playing pro or anything like that, but he was a big guy, defenseman, fighter. He would jaw at me quite a bit, and I was like, well, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But then they took the first couple games, so there was a bit of an incident in warm-up, the one game, and I think there was like three or four of us that got, I forget how it worked out. I can't remember exactly, but it definitely didn't work out to our team's favor, getting into a big scrum during warm-up. That was one of those things where, shit, I wish things would have went different, because if we would have made it out of that round kind of thing, then, you know, things would have been way different. But
Yeah, we had a really good team. We had a lot of skilled players on that team. And, yeah, everybody was kind of like, holy shit, I can't believe we lost.
Yeah. Well, like you said, right, once the playoffs start, whole new season, right? And it's just,
yeah,
you run into a hot goalie or whatever, just don't get a few couple bounces, and, yeah, next thing you know, you're heading home. Yeah. But, well, there, that wraps up the junior segment of Colt King's career. Well, okay, so you wrap up your junior career, and you find yourself down in Augusta with the Lynx of the East Coast League.
Yeah, well, actually, so how that worked out, too, actually, I went to Reading. That's where I initially signed, was with Reading.
Okay.
But that was a year of NHL lockout.
Yep.
So the snowball effect happened. And Reading was affiliated with two American League teams, and I think it was two. Anyways, they got a bunch of American League guys sent down, and actually George Parros was one of them. It's funny, we went to we had a Halloween party, and he went as Superman, but he bought like a child's Superman uniform, and George Parros is 6'5", 230, just shredded and jacked. So it basically turned into a two piece. And actually, I'll never forget that because it was hilarious. But yeah, so that's why they're like, well, you know, we unfortunately you can either stick it out here because we'd like to keep you, or you can go to Augusta. Augusta wants you to go. I say, yeah, I'll go to Augusta. That's where if I can play, but then yeah, I'm going to go to Augusta. So went to Augusta, Georgia.
How was hockey down south? What did you think down there?
Well, so, I mean, I really hadn't spent at that point much time in the States past, let's say, like Minnesota, you know, unless I went to like Chicago or something like that for a hockey tournament or somewhere just like for the weekend, yeah. I really hadn't been in the States a whole lot. And so then I got sent down south to Augusta, Georgia, and man, it was an eye-opening experience because I mean, playing in Augusta itself, I mean, well, where we were actually, where our condos were, where we stayed, was literally a 2-minute drive from the Masters, the Augusta course, National.
Yeah.
So it's weird the way it's set up because it's literally like in like the heart of the city. In the city, it's almost like the city's built around it. But there's this huge, you know, like 12-foot-high bamboo fences and stuff like that, so you can't see anything in there. You can just kind of see one dog leg off. I think it's number 8. I think it is off the highway. You can kind of just see the way it's shaped, but you just can't see the actual fairway or anything itself. But yeah. Augusta, it was a good place. Lots of really friendly people down there.
Well, and just just take me into your your first pro season. You know, you had 13 tilts, and you're now getting paid. You're a pro now. What was the step up like from junior to the pro ranks?
Well, with the East Coast League, though, the East Coast League, it was still, like, it's a younger league, too, right? So it is literally almost like, to me, it seemed like...
Junior 2.0?
Pretty much. It really did. You know, like, there were some older players, there's a lot bigger guys and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it didn't seem... But other than having, like... having a few players in the team that had kids or families already, it didn't seem a whole lot different. Except now, yeah, and I'm living on my own. I don't have billets anymore, which was nice.
Yep.
But we were talking earlier about having footage from, like the early days of when I was playing and stuff like that, and there's one fight from my rookie year where I fought this. He was a European guy, but he was a gritty, gritty player. He fought quite a bit. His name was Jan Vadraska.
Yep. Yep.
See if I can. Is that was yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So anyways, yeah. So I had fought him one game, and man, I have a couple pictures from it, but I've never seen actually any, none, like no footage or anything like that. And but that was one of those like I don't think I missed one time when I threw a punch, and he just stood there and ate all of them, and I was like, oh my god, what is going to happen? Like my hands are going to break before he's going to fall. But it was a really good fight. He was a tough, tough man, and that's a fight I'll never forget.
Well, you had like Chris Barch, Eric Knode, and Lane Manson, and Brandon Coulter, and yeah, I mean, you had a bunch of tilts that year. Well, and then you, of course, then yeah, go ahead.
Oh yeah, and these ones. Once I got to Augusta, and you know what, maybe a little bit in Sarnia too. That's when they started to be a lot more staged, not as much in the moment kind of thing. Like that's the one difference I found is that you know there was a lot of hey, you want to go? Hey, you want to go? You want to do this? Yeah, okay, we'll go. Instead of always just, you know, being in a battle kind of situation. That's what I found once I started stepping into the pro ranks, that it's a lot more, okay, hey, you want to go and just kind of do? I'm like, all right.
Did you find that harder to do?
Yeah, because, again, like, I wasn't, I mean, now at this point, I'm accepting the fact that, you know, fighting's a big part of my game now, right? Like,
yeah,
I've obviously been fighting more and more as the years went on. So at this point, yeah, I know that's what I'm going to do. But yeah, it was kind of funny the first couple times I did it because I was like, this seems silly, but it's a lot easier if you're just able to get into from battling in front of the net or something like that. It's easier to be able to get into it and start fighting that way than to square up and stuff like that because there's just so much that runs through your head. You know, so the heat of the moment I prefer, but yeah. The staged ones, yeah, you just sit there and I mean, for me anyways, I'm like, okay, what's he going to throw first? Where is he going to grab? Is he going to knock me out in front of the boys? You know, like stuff like that, so.
Yeah, like, I mean, everybody, you know, if I mean, you obviously you fight long enough, you're gonna get caught at some point, right? Everyone does. When that happened, did you find it hard? Did you want to come back right away and get into one again right away to prove you're okay and you could still do it, or did you find yourself you were a little gun shy, or how did you react to that?
It kind of depends. So. There was only really a couple where I got dropped and, you know, like where the Stortini fight, I fought Stortini, he dropped me and I was fuzzy again. He hit me right in the eye socket. I couldn't see anything either. So there was that time. And it wasn't until I was playing in Utah and I fought another guy.
Dallas Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He caught me with one and put me down and I tried to fight him again that game but he didn't fight me. But I wasn't gun shy per se. It's gonna happen regardless. So it's not like I'm never gonna fight again. It was inevitable. It wasn't ever about my wins or losses. It was how it affected the boys.
Yep. Right?
Like for me, it was like, if I'm going to fight whoever, doesn't matter who it is, if I'm going to fight this person, it depends on obviously the time of the game, what that person has maybe done to a teammate of mine or whatever the case may be, right? Or what they do to me. So my outlook was always, okay, first and foremost, how does it affect the game? And then secondly, how is it going to look in front of the boys? So if I'm going to fight somebody and they're, much smaller than me, I was usually a little more nervous, because I'm like, if I get beat up by somebody smaller than me, the boys are going to be like, well, fuck. Like, it's not like, you know, they're just going to all of a sudden turn their backs on me or anything like that. I never thought like that. But then I'm just like, well, how does that look for them, and what does that make them feel like, and does that change the way they're going to play if something like that happens, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, it was just, it was kind of interesting. Well, yeah, as you were talking about, you, before we get to Utah, the next year at Augusta, there's a guy there, a teammate of yours, I want to ask you about, because there's, they told a really funny story about him on Spit and Chiglets, actually, with Lee Jacobson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was he like a bouncer that just decided to, like, play? That's the way they told it on Spit and Chiglets, anyway.
Kind of, yeah. He was pretty much. He was like a bouncer, yeah. Like, worked in a bar, boxed a little bit. It's kind of like the Goon story, actually. Where Coach saw him in the stands. He's like, we need that guy. He couldn't skate. He couldn't play. Like, he really didn't even fully understand hockey. So the guy, yeah, he was. Anyways, where was he from? Was he from New York or something like that?
Chicago,
yeah, yeah. And, I remember him telling stories, and I was like, holy fuck, this guy's an animal. Like, this guy lives and breathes fighting.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen the War Al fight, but...
Yeah, that was a little tough. Yeah.
But the guy was game. He was game, man.
Yeah. Well, it's like I saw his name, and I'm like, oh, I got to ask you about this guy. Yeah.
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 Yeah. No, he was it was painful to, like, practice with him and stuff. Because you weren't getting a crisp pass. You didn't know if he was taking a pass. You almost had to guide him where to go sometimes. But lived and breathed fighting, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. There's a guy. I got to get him on the show. That'd be an interesting show with him. Yeah.
There you go.
Tell a few stories. Well, like you say, you end up in Utah, and your coach is Jason Christie. Smurf. Did you get along with him?
Yeah, I got along with Smurf. Yeah, he was fun. He still wanted to be one of the boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I got along with him. Yeah, he was a good coach.
Well, and then, of course, you have, you know, Alfie Michaud was there, and Louis Dumont, you know, he's East Coast League's all-time leading scorer. And a few characters. I'm just kind of looking here. Brad Harif. There's a sass boy. Trevor Baker, another tough dude.
Yeah. He was skinny, man. Anyways, that has nothing to do with fighting, but yeah, he was very small, but he was very tough. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just noticed. I was going to ask you about somebody else, but I saw Tanner Schultz is there. Yeah, he played for the Blades for a little while. He wasn't there for very long, but yeah. But what was your time in Utah like?
Utah was different. It was a different place to be, but yeah, it was a really nice city. It was a good team. We had a good group of guys in that team. There was a lot of laughs between us with that team. That's for sure. We had some good guys. I hung out with Harry the most, with Brad Harif. He was tough. I mean, he was another one of those undersized guys and just fought everybody. Just played hard.
No, absolutely. And you had the fight with, you know, as you mentioned, Dallas Anderson, the tough one there. But immediately after that, it's like 7 days later in Vegas, you had a toe-to-toe with Thomas Belmar.
Yeah, that's another one of those. I wish I could see the tape on that one. That was a good tilt.
I believe I have that fight on DVD, actually, because I have the Las Vegas footage from that year, I think, so I'm sure that's on there. So I will check tonight for you after we're done, and I'll put it up on really? YouTube if I got it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cause from what I remember, what's even funnier is that Mr. T dropped the puck for the game. I don't know if I remember that. Mr. T was in the house, and he dropped the opening puck. So, yeah. I got in that fight that game, and I remember, from what I can remember anyways, that it was one of those where we were both throwing everything we had from everywhere we had, and we were both just standing in there and just throwing. Yeah, no, I'd be really interested to actually see what it looked like.
Yeah, and like, he's a tough dude, man. That's a big guy. And I mean, of course, he went on and went back and played forever in the Quebec League, in the LNAH. And interesting enough, I mean, everybody listening knows Joel Theriault. I mean, everyone's seen that guy and all his footage on there and all the fights that dude's been in. And he said Belmar was like the toughest guy he ever fought, actually. So you you imagine Theriault saying that. That covers a lot of ground. So, yeah, so when I saw him on your fight card, I had to ask you.
Yeah, and that was another one of those, I don't need to fight. Like, I don't need to fight you, but... It was actually me and Harry were having a bit of a penalty minute off that year because we were both very similar in penalty minutes. So any chance you could to grab a few more, you would. But no, I think they were giving it to us that game, and that was one of those. Okay, I got to do it. Let's go. Let's get it done.
How were those road trips to Vegas? Those had to be a fun trip.
Yeah, they were pretty fun.
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, anytime you're in Vegas is pretty fun, but yeah, especially when you're with the boys.
Absolutely. And another guy that comes up, and of course he did it for a long time in the American League, and was and you've actually fought him back to back nights, it looks like. There's Jimmy Bonin.
Yeah, on the Blue Ice, in Long Island there. Yeah, he was one of those guys I kind of took lightly at first. I didn't know much of him. I didn't really think much of him, but definitely one tough guy for sure.
Yeah.
The first fight was a real off balance fight. I think I remember between the two of us, and I think the second fight went much better. But he's big too, though, right?
Yeah, really. Yeah, very. Well, so after you're done up in Utah, there, it's 2006, 2007. You're 23 years old. You end up in Port Huron. What in the United League or the new IHL, whatever they were calling it at that time? It'll always be the United League to me. But how did you end up there? And, how did you end up in Port Huron?
So I ended up in Port Huron because of my coach, Stan Drulia, who was my coach in Augusta.
Yep.
And, he really liked me, and, he convinced me that if I went there, and I'm not saying he was, was a ploy or anything, but he's just like, you know, there's two American League teams within, you know, an hour and a half driving distance of where we are. So you come down here, he goes, I'm going to play the shit out of you. You come down here and you have a good year, then we can try to get you up and get you some American League games. I'm like, okay. And they were offering the most money out of anybody at the time too. So I was like, yeah, why not? Double bonus. So, I went to Port Huron. Oh, fuck that city. That city's, I mean, the fans were great. That city's not that. there's a strip bar. What the fuck is it called? Showtimes, or I don't know. Anyways, their sign on the sign says, there's 50 beautiful women and 3 ugly ones.
Yeah, there you go. Rolling into town. I've made it now. Here we are.
Well, and we actually had to drive past that sign every single day to and from the restaurant, or to and from our where we stayed and where the rink was. So we had to drive by it steady. Actually, speaking of signs, actually, so I played with Rob Snowball, which was a monster, and he was super tough. And Mike Olnick, another super tough guy.
Yeah.
So three of us were on a line, which was hilarious, and we just, you know, teams would just dread playing against us. Anyways, they put up a billboard right across the street from the Rippers. They put a billboard up of me, Snowy, and Ollie for, you know, promoting coming to our games and how tough our team is and this and that. And it was brutal because they had me right in the middle of the two guys, right in the forefront. And I had just lost Mustache Boy, so I was like 2 weeks into growing my mustache, and I don't grow a good mustache to begin with. So the guy said he had to like digitally enhance my mustache in there so it didn't look so shitty. So that's hilarious. But anyways, yeah, what did it say? Come and get it or something like that. Anyways, yeah, it was funny. We had a laugh about that.
Ah, the classic minor league hockey promotions. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was beautiful. I have a picture of it somewhere. Yeah, oh, it's hilarious.
Tremendous. Well, yeah. Well, you said you brought up Olenek and Snowball, and I mean that was a tough league, man. Like, oh man, just looking at some of the guys in that league, and you know, I mean, you got Robin Big Snake there in Rockford, and you know, I think you know, you had Tidball and Ryan Jordy and Frank Littlejohn, and
McIntyre was there too.
I was about, yeah, that you're reading my notes here. That's my next one. Yeah. McIntyre's in Quad, and it's like, Rockford's got Big Snake and Lizon. I mean, you know, and then Kalamazoo, of course, has got McAllister and Willis. And it's, what was it like playing against Willis?
And then Engelstad came back at the end of the season. I think he played a couple games somewhere too.
Motor City, yeah.
Who else fucking played there? McCarty came down and played a few games. Like, Jesus Christ, like, why can't we get skilled players? Why is it got to be all these tough guys?
Yeah. Yeah. They, yeah, well, what was, yeah, like, when you're, well, like I said, one of your fights is, of course, is against, you fought Curtis Tidball. I mean, and that guy, you know, of course, he was around forever, and he was in Elmira.
Yeah, that guy was... That's another one of those guys that lives and breathes. So I don't know if this is true, but apparently when he was a kid, again, this is a story I heard, that his dad would get him to go and fight drunk guys leaving the bar when he was like 15, 16 years old.
Wow.
I don't know if that's true or not, so like I have no facts on that, but I heard that. And that was one of the stories I heard. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this guy, and you play against him, like, man, this guy, like, I don't even know how he's on the ice right now, because he literally can't play hockey. And that's all he wants to do all the time is fight. He's not even focused on the game. So it's almost distracting.
Well, like you say, he ended up in the LNAH, which is probably a perfect place for him. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one guy that did do it for a long time and was a good player, and you took him on, was Frank Littlejohn.
Yeah. He was one of those guys that, you know, like, I had respect for him from the moment we played against each other. I knew he, whatever, had his reputation and stuff like that, but he didn't play dirty. He was one of those guys that literally policed the ice. He kept things in check, you know? So when I fought him, it was just kind of one of those, yep, okay, let's just have a goal. It was kind of inevitable. It was, let's see if we can do it. I think mutually, that's the way I looked at it anyways. It's kind of like, it didn't necessarily affect the game too much. It was just more like, hey, let's have a go. And, but when I fought him, I remember thinking in the back of my mind, that was another one of those things where I'm like, man, I can't let this guy beat me in front of the boys. Only because I'm just bigger than him. That's purely the only reason. Obviously, he's very tough. He's very skilled. He's beat up a lot of people. But that was my mindset that whole time. And I remember thinking, man, if I just hit him with one of these, that's going to be the end of it. And I fell, I think, two or three times just because I was just trying to throw so much behind it that it just threw me off balance.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, definitely a tough dude, and yeah, well, so you know, so Port Huron. I mean, it was, you know, bit of a rough up and down year. You guys, you know, you made the playoffs, but you know, out in the first round. But I'm just looking after that. You know, you're like I said, you're bouncing around, and it's off to the Central League. All right, guys, I think we'll stop it right here. Thank you very much for tuning in to part one with Colt King. Like I said, Colt was a great guest, a lot of fun to talk to, and we will pick this back up on Sunday, where we go to we take the ride to Rapid City and championship with Colt, and then across the pond to the play for the Sheffield Steelers, and then back to North America to play in Missouri. And some interesting stories coming, let me tell you. And yeah, so we'll talk to you guys on Sunday for part two with Colt King. Thanks, everybody.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?